I remember just crying in relief that I knew what was going on, that it wasn't my fault, and that there was something we could do about it.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for downloading episode 1 of the ADHD Dad Podcast. In this episode, I sit down with my wife, Jennifer. We discuss what it's like being neurotypical and married to somebody with ADHD, finding out our children have ADHD, and how that's improved us as a family. I have ADHD. Mm-hmm. Two of our boys have ADHD.
Right.
When I first met you, mm-hmm. neither of us knew any of this.
Right.
So it's been a lot of revelations along the way.
Right.
Okay. As someone who's learned about this over time and has come to have some realizations about the way your husband and your children behave, mm-hmm. And how that relates to ADHD, what was the most surprising thing that you found?
How relieved I was. Just being relieved that... That there was finally like, that's why that happens. That's why he does that. And, oh, it's like, it's not just that I was a bad mom. he can't concentrate in school. He's not getting great grades because he has all these, you know, things that are going on in his head. It's not just because I'm not coming down on him hard enough or whatever.
Okay. So that obviously relates to Josh, who's 17.
Right.
Yeah. Was there ever a point when you thought there might be some issues with Josh that needed addressing?
I mean, I guess it seemed like I just felt like he was kind of lazy, you know? It's like you could focus on the things that you want to focus on. You just won't focus on school. You won't focus on your housework. You can't remember this stuff. You can remember when you're going to go hang out with your friends. So to me, it was, yeah, there was something to address, but I just thought that I needed to be more of a disciplinarian or something.
That makes sense. And I know also that when it comes to our relationship as well, you've had similar sort of experiences where things you'd attributed to either me being lazy or me not caring or me disregarding you, you've subsequently learned maybe I wasn't completely in control of that.
Right. Which, again, that was a relief as well. Because part of that, of the behaviors that you had, would make me think, what am I doing wrong that's making him not care? Why am I not good enough to like deserve the attention or the whatever it is? And so having something say, no, it's not about you, was really relieving.
You can go into specifics of that too.
Well, I mean, you know, just feeling like I would ask you to do something or I would need you to do something and I would tell you that it was important to me and then it just wouldn't happen. You know, like we used to fight so much about getting out the door together in the morning. And I would always just think it's just not important to him because I needed to be able to work on time. Your schedule was much more flexible. So, well, it's not affecting him. His work doesn't care. So he obviously just doesn't care about what's going on with me. So knowing that, no, it's not you just, you know, being a butthole. It's because of this other stuff that's going on has made me a lot more patient and understanding.
Can you describe what it was like when we first met and first started talking and what role, if any, sort of ADHD maybe played in the attraction there?
Well, you know, from what I've read about ADHD, that there's a lot of tunnel vision. And then once the feelings of, you know, the chemicals that are caught, like motivating you to focus on that one person, once they start to be less motivating, it just feels like all of a sudden you drop out of nowhere. So our courtship was you focusing almost completely on me, like all the time, which was great. And we were always talking and things like that. And you were always so interested in like making me laugh and da da da. And then when things started to cool off, as they just do in every relationship, it wasn't just a gradual cooling off. It was like falling off a cliff. Just all of a sudden there was nothing. And that was really hard for me to not take personally.
And do you remember how far into the relationship that I could? More or less.
Oh, geez.
Not to be exact.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty early, I would say, not long after you moved here.
Okay, so you say it even took that long. So we're talking,
Year?
yeah, a year, something like
Yeah.
that. Yeah.
It felt like I was something that you had achieved and therefore we're done with. Okay, I've already taken care of that. That's
Right.
out of
Right.
the way.
That makes sense. That's kind of a blind spot for me because obviously to me it doesn't feel any different. It's like, okay, maybe it's not the focus of my attention all the time, but I still feel the same way about you as I did then. So while I can understand your perspective, it's something that doesn't occur to me very often. Is it that that's just completely gone now, or are there still moments where maybe the hyperfocus will kick in again?
Yeah. It's not as easy as it used to be to kick it in. And I'm sure that the longer we're together, the more, pronounced that's going to be. But yeah, I can still every once in a while I can tell when I'm the focus of attention and I kind of soak it in for as long as I get it.
Yeah, maybe I can do that later. Yeah. So I know you're in these ADHD support groups for spouses. I also have had some kind of revelation come through the Gina Pera book that we both read.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, there's some weird things in there that even I didn't even particularly think about, and I'm sure that you've got some more from talking to these other spouses. I mean, one that stuck out to me was I think you mentioned like the following you around the house.
When you're upset.
Well, not even when I'm upset, just in general. Like even now, sort of, if I'm bored and I'm doing anything, I'll just sort of come over to you,
Oh,
see what you're doing, And I just kind of wander,
yeah. Or like loom over me. I'm gonna be in your general vicinity now. Let's see what happens.
Right. And I'd never considered that to be part of ADHD. It was kind of surprising that they had mentioned it. But is there anything else like that that you've discovered that's just kind of odd and we wouldn't necessarily think about?
I notice a lot more now, and I don't know how odd it is, but I notice a lot more how you drop off of projects. Like you'll start a project and then just be done with it. And then we'll have like half projects kind of all over the house. And yeah, not really realizing before that that had anything to do with ADHD. And seeing that with Josh as well, his art projects and stuff are the oldest son. The art projects as well, he would start an art project, and if it took more than an hour or so to complete, he would just not do it. He would start it and then not finish it. So,
Right.
yeah.
Okay. So with regards to the kids again, and obviously Josh is medicated and he takes a few different medications to control different aspects of ADHD and
Right.
different things he's got going on. With Henry, our youngest, who has just turned 6, we don't do any medication yet. In fact, we haven't even pursued a formal diagnosis yet, but I think we both agree.
Yeah, it's definitely got ADHD.
Right. We've had some small discussions, like little skirmishes about how we might want to approach medicating Henry when the time comes. Do you think you're like able to fully articulate your point of view on that?
I think so. I mean, I don't even know that I necessarily feel a need to medicate him right now because he's still pretty young and he seems to be doing well in school and socializing well. He is difficult to live with at home, but for me, I just want to be getting him diagnosed and treated. I really want to be him to be seeing a cognitive behavioral therapist. I want to, instead of, I think we've discussed this before, but instead of being reactive to his ADHD, I want to be proactive. So we're teaching him specific skills that he can use to balance out some of his ADHD symptoms. And I think that we maybe are not the best people to teach that. I think that having somebody from the outside come in and teach him those skills would be better because I think he would be more receptive to other people. Not just that we don't know what we're doing, which to some extent is true also, but just I think it would be better for from an outside person.
If he did have any area he might need to work on, what would it be in your opinion?
Oh, geez. There's a couple. the blurting is really difficult. And Josh had the same thing. Mm-hmm. And he would get in trouble for it in school, just blurting things out. So Henry interrupts a lot. He'll also, if there's a silence, he needs to fill it with a loud sound and then just keep screeching or screaming or whatever. And it really grates on the nerves. It makes dinner difficult. You know, we can't really talk around the dinner table because he interjects a lot and is screaming and making these noises. Mm-hmm. And
always seems to want to get our attention.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just, I think he just is, you know, his body wants to get the energy out. So he screams. And, you know, that's the motivation is to scream, and he doesn't have the impulse control to stop himself. So you can't get upset with him. You can't yell at him because he can't help himself.
Right, right.
So giving him the skills to be able to manage that, I think, would be, to some extent, to any extent, would be better than what we're doing right now.
Right, right. And that's obviously been a bit of a problem for us, because not only is it Henry blurting out at the dinner table, and he's not able to control himself. It's an impulse control issue. So not only is he doing that, we've then also got two more people with ADHD who have to not react to it.
Yeah. So, and that's difficult too, because by that time of the evening, Josh is definitely off of, you know, he's come down from his meds. And a lot of times you have too. And so once you've come off of them, you are both much more irritable than usual and have a lot less patience for, say, a six-year-old screaming at the top of his lungs. So then I have Henry screaming and then you guys yelling at Henry about screaming. It's just a lot of chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm very hyper aware even of when my Adderall is wearing off and how irritated I get.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even being aware of it, even trying to, you know, self-talk myself out of it, it's just, I'm in a bad mood.
Yeah.
It's not going away.
Yeah, I tend to be like, what time of the night is it? Oh, that's why he's why he's angry. I'm just going to take a step back, and that's when I'll usually find something else to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Let you do your thing.
So in your experience, how long does that typically last?
The irritability?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it depends. It's like you tend to be pretty irritable until you get so tired that you're going to bed. So if you're coming off of the medications, but it depends on what's going on around us completely.
So I've had the Adderall in various dosages, and then I added in the Strattera as an additional medication, I think probably about a year and a half ago now.
Mm.
So were there any pronounced differences that you noticed in me when I started those various treatments?
When you started the first treatment, it was like night and day. I mean, I've kind of used the Jekyll and Hyde and the comparison before. I don't know if it was that extreme, like you weren't this monster before you started taking them, but it was like just night and day. I mean, it was, you were almost a completely different person. You were so much more calm and patient and like, I mean, not just focused. Like, it was great to see you more focused and like less scattered about work or what was going on around the house. It's great to have you be able to like remember that we need to do something tonight or we have to get out the door, things like that. But just your person, like not just your personality, but like your mood was a lot more likely to be good. It was really pretty remarkable how quickly it happened.
Are there any downsides you've noticed to me taking the medications?
The come down. Okay. When you stop taking them and get irritable, it's worse than before you started taking them. Like it's pretty rough. But other than that, no, I don't think so.
Hmm. Okay. Now, before I started taking the medication, I got my diagnosis. I planned to start taking medication. And you had a lot of concerns about that initially.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about those a little bit and how long it took to maybe change your mind on those and maybe what caused you to change your mind?
You know, I come from a background of being around a lot of people who took Adderall and Ritalin who didn't have ADHD. Or who did and took huge doses of it. So I saw a lot of people who were addicted to those medications who shouldn't have been taking them, who were, you know, getting them from unseemly sources. And so I have seen people that are really, have been really wrecked from from taking it. And I just immediately kind of like my mama bear instinct came out to be like, no, I don't want that in my house. That stuff ruins lives. Like I was really worried that it was going to be like a meth of some kind. And the more I read about it, the more calm I got about it, but I was still really nervous about it, probably until you'd been taking it for a couple of weeks. And that's when I realized, like, it's not making you jittery. It's not making you act irrationally or, like, jump out of your skin. To have it be doing the opposite was remarkable.
How did you feel about Josh taking medication?
Once you had started taking it, I felt a lot better. When you get this, there's such a stigma around medicating kids who have ADHD. And they, you know, oh, it's over exaggerated how many kids have it and you're medicating too early and you give them too much medication. And if you give them medication, it's going to make them numb and they're just going to be like zombies in the classroom and things like that. And I think that stigma makes it so that you don't treat a child who has ADHD. So I actually had a teacher suggest to me that I get Josh tested for ADHD when he was in fifth grade. And I was insulted that she thought my child had ADHD, because to me, that was an insult. And two, it was very like, why would you just label a kid with ADHD just because you don't like how he acts in your class? Because I also didn't know what some of the side symptoms were of ADHD. It's not just being hyper. It's, you know, there's so many other things. So yeah, there's so much stigma around it that I don't know that I would have wanted to medicate him if I hadn't already seen the medications do such great things for you. I think that stigma would have carried me on into his adulthood without treating him.
I think the reason we came to a diagnosis for Josh was, I think that was through reading Gina Perez's book as well,
absolutely,
wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Because there was so many, I was going through and I was flagging the pages and I would go, okay, there's my husband. Oh, there's Josh. There's my ex-husband. Like little flags through the whole book, because it was just illuminating to see that is exactly what Josh has going on. That is exactly what he's dealing with. And I remember just crying with relief that I knew what was going on, that it wasn't my fault, and that there was something we could do about it to help him.
Without going into too much detail, I mean, you've had occasional mental health thing going on for yourself as well.
Right.
And so it's interesting that even with that background, you'd still see a stigma attached to ADHD.
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's everybody diagnoses a kid with ADHD. As soon as they, you know, if they can't stay in their seat all day, they get called ADHD and get drugged up. And that's kind of the stigma around it. And yeah, you don't really see that a lot with other mental health issues. And I think it's because nobody understands what ADHD is. We think it means that you're hyperactive, you can't sit down, you can't focus. It was very illuminating, like I said, to know that it was so much more and what the other symptoms are that are associated with it. It was just amazing.
Do you see any good sides to ADHD?
I think that hyper-focus can be amazing in making someone driven. You sit down and you focus on this one thing and you want to accomplish this one thing. And it can be hard when you've got the blinders on, so you don't see everything that's going on around you. But it makes it so that when you guys do sit down to do something, it doesn't take you long and you do it well. So like Josh learning how to play the drums, he's improved so much since he started, and he hasn't been doing it for very long, but he just gets tunnel vision about it. Mm-hmm. And he did the same thing with his guitar, and you do it with your projects with work. And you know, that's one of the things that you're best at work, right? Is they give you a problem and you solve it. And I think that has a lot to do with your ADHD.
Do you ever try and harness that or induce that? If you were going to do it, what would you do?
Not with you as much as I do with the kids. I try to find ways, like now that I know that it's all about stimulating them and doing things to stimulate them to be motivated, I try to find ways that I can, okay, what can I do that's going to make the, you know, the little bits in their brain zap, like what's going to get them going and finding this interesting. to try to motivate them to do things or to motivate them not to do things. Like, why is he why is the impulse to do this? And where can I turn that impulse to get him to do something less destructive?
I would say, as a parent of kids with ADHD, I'm married to someone who has ADHD, I'm assuming there's some things that you definitely don't do.
I'm very cognizant now. Is that the word? Cognizant now of how much there is going on in a room. I try not to have like the TV real loud or have a bunch of sounds going on at the same time. You know, I try to make it so that the living room isn't as messy, because everyone is super cranky when the living room gets too messy, because you guys get overwhelmed by, if it's not what you have in your tunnel vision, then it's just noise and it overwhelms you. So not adding to that chaos, I guess, is how I try to navigate it.
We both read about the benefits of having a routine for the kids. Mm-hmm. And I know about how beneficial it is for myself to have a routine. Right. It's about the only way that I can get things done is mm-hmm. to have the boring stuff just be automatic.
Right.
Things will always come up. So especially when you've got three kids, it's, you know, there's always something.
Yeah.
And so maintaining a routine can be quite difficult. And obviously for myself, who has ADHD, that's goes double. Mm. So what sort of guardrails are we using to keep these routines on track and
structure?
Yeah.
Trying to think of like our routine and our structure and stuff, it just reminds me of trying to like wrangle feral cats. For Henry, for his morning routine, we write everything down on a list and then we have him go down the list. This is what needs to be done. This is what needs to be done. Here's what's next. That sort of thing.
We have to change it up. I mean, that's the thing. If we just stick to doing one thing, eventually it gets tired and boring and becomes background noise. And so it can't be maintained forever. You have to keep changing, switching the tactic a little bit. So with Henry, it's a sort of balance between various things. Like, we put incentives out there. So maybe he wants to watch an episode of SpongeBob before school. So that can be an incentive to get him to go get dressed quickly, mm-hmm. you know, instead yeah. of taking 20 minutes.
Yeah.
In the past, I mean, we've used like candy as well. You can, if you do all your stuff on time, you can have a treat to take to school with you.
Right.
That kind of thing. You know, setting timers. So we've got a house full of
yes.
Amazon Echoes, mm-hmm. and being able to set a timer seems to really help him be motivated to get something done and beat mm-hmm. the timer.
Yeah, that's been a huge tool for reminders and stuff too, and alarms and alerts and. Yeah, that's been great.
So, yeah, I think that the key there is that none of them work in isolation. We have to keep switching and adapting. And if we don't...
Yeah, it's hard because you have to strike a balance. You can't, if you switch too much and change too much, then there isn't structure and there isn't routine. So you have to make it so that you're switching things not very often and that you're only switching one thing at a time. So that they can get used to the new routine before slipping into another one.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else specifically you want to talk about?
It's hard. I would say, like, if I could say anything else, it would be how hard it is to be outnumbered by people have ADHD in the way that it, you know, I kind of have to keep everybody in line. Like I said, wrangling feral cats, like being able to talk about that a little.
Yeah, and I mean, another thing we took from the Junipero book was just the statistically the number of ADHD spouses who have some stress-related illness. Mm-hmm. And
it's very common for them to have autoimmune disorders and, yeah, stress-related illnesses. And, you know, that was one of the things that was another kind of relief for me, was because I was having so many health issues and, you know, autoimmune issues, and nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. And to find out that that was so common of spouses, it just lifted something off of my shoulders. Like, okay, I don't have blood cancer or something. Like, I just need less stress in my life. I need to learn how to cope with this different kind of life that I have that, you know, most people don't.
Yeah, and I remember, I mean, even though it was clearly a relief for you, you were pissed off.
Yeah, it was a little bit. Because it's debilitating. You know, I'm not able to work full time anymore. I'm in a lot of pain for my muscles and my joints. I was fatigued so much that I was like constantly sleeping, falling asleep at my desk at work. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. So I was worried about it too. So I'm in pain and I'm exhausted and I'm, worried, stressed out about my stress out and blaming it all on myself. What am I doing that's making all this stuff happen? So to know that there was like an outside source, at first you're like, oh, thank God there's an outside source. And then you're like, wait, this is your fault? What the hell? So, yeah, there was some anger there. And there was, some anger because it felt like we talked a lot about it in terms of, well, you just not need to stop being so stressed out and like you need to take better care of yourself, which is true. But then knowing that the person who was telling me to stop being so stressed out was a source of my stress was really infuriating.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but, right. I know. Yeah. It's a mystery.
And again, from my point of view, I don't get to see any of this because I don't think the way I live is particularly stressful. For me, it just seems normal. It's
right.
Yeah. You know, what in particular would strike you as something that seems particularly normal to me, but might be stressful to someone who doesn't have ADHD? I mean, obviously, the being late to everything would be one of them.
Yeah, but that's gotten easier since we've learned how to kind of work around the ADHD.
Right.
I would say, like, having to work around... I know that like a lot of people who have ADHD based on what I've read have a hypersensitivity to criticism. And that can take, if you are receiving criticism, you can be much more sensitive to it. And I mean, you as in, just the population of people with ADHD, but you can be more sensitive to it. But it also means that sometimes when there's not criticism there, it still feels like a criticism. And so I think that for you, it's like, you're obviously criticizing me. And if you didn't have ADHD, you would have a different perspective on it because there wouldn't be such a sensitivity to it.
Right.
And it's also a thing that's one of the more challenging things to work around in our relationship and my relationship with Josh as well. You end up feeling like you're kind of walking on eggshells. Because you don't know what thing you're going to say that will not just like with Josh, it's hurt Josh because he is sensitive. So you'll hurt his feelings. You'll make him sad. You'll lower his self-esteem. With you, it'll make you irritable and you'll, want to say something about it and like fight to the death about it. So it creates this feeling where you want to kind of walk on eggshells so that you don't say or do the wrong thing to set off whatever is going to be set off.
Mm-hmm. Having that sort of looming as well in conversations. I mean, even last night, it was a situation where I remember what the conversation was about, but you'd said something and I'd said something back and it had come across as a little bit harsh to you. So you assumed that I had gone into like a defensive state and start saying, I wasn't criticizing,
right,
that kind of thing. But I didn't think you were criticizing. It's
right.
Just, it's always looming in every conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since we've both read a decent amount about ADHD and the symptoms and the way it manifests in relationships and things like that, there's often times where, you'll distinctly remember doing something or saying something, and I don't remember it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, sometimes you are correct, and there are occasions when that's not the case.
Well,
but
and
we never really know.
That was another big remarkable relief thing, because there are so many times that I would say, we just talked about this, or you agreed to this. We talked about it so many times, and you'll just insist that it never happened. And so for a while, I thought, this guy is trying to gaslight me. Like, he wants me to think I'm insane. He's just changing his mind and then trying to convince me that nothing ever happened. Like, just gaslighting me so badly. So being able to see in black and white that, like, no, you're not just manipulating me, that you honestly don't remember those things, was huge. It was hugely beneficial to our relationship, hugely beneficial to our relationship to understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's not like I'm completely unaware of it myself too. I mean, it's helpful to know that it is a feature of ADHD, but even a little bit of self-awareness, you come to that conclusion anyway. I mean, just yesterday I was working on my computer and you'd come home and we'd had a conversation. And I immediately ended that conversation and thought, I didn't hear a word of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that can be tough. And it means that you have to really trust the person that you're with. I have to trust you that you're not gaslighting me and then just acting like it's the ADHD. I have to put a lot of faith in our relationship and trust in you to believe that, and vice versa. You have to have a lot of faith in me that I'm not going to tell you that something happened and you just don't remember it. No, we talked about this. You gave me permission to get the new puppy or whatever. You just don't remember it. Like, you have to have faith in me to believe me when I say those things and that I'm not just manipulating you and using your ADHD as that manipulation.
Right, right. There's been a few times I've thought that maybe the ADHD is getting the blame for something that isn't really there. Like, right. There's been times when I've been fairly sure we haven't had a conversation. Mm-hmm. And it's not like that a conversation where maybe I remember a little bit of it, but I don't remember the whole thing or the conclusion or something like that. But right. Like stuff that I would remember this conversation. This is something important to me. I would not have zoned out during that conversation.
Right.
It's very easy for, in those moments, ADHD to get the blame.
Right.
And I never quite know what to do with that.
Right.
Because on the one hand, I have to be self-aware and acknowledge that these kind of conscious blackouts happen. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't want to be the one who's wrong every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
And I think that boils down to having faith in your partner and, you know, belief that they want what's best for you and for the relationship. If you believe that your partner can manipulate you in that way or would manipulate you in that way, then you're going to have less faith in what they're saying to you. And you're not going to be able to believe them when they tell you this stuff. And so it really boils down to, you have to make sure that the person you're with is a good person, or that can go out of hand really quickly.
Part of this whole kind of dealing with ADHD and interpersonal relationships extends to figuring out how much is the ADHD versus the person, the personality. And I've not really figured out how to separate the two things in many regards.
Right.
It's like, I don't know what's me and what's ADHD, because I've always had it. So my personality has developed around it.
Right,
so,
right.
I'm never quite sure. I imagine it's probably even trickier for you because you don't get to know my, you know, inner monologue.
Yeah.
So I can have a reasonable guess. Mm-hmm. And you've just got to piece things together.
Well, and it's tricky, yeah. Like when we're trying to work on parts of our relationship that we might be having difficulties with, it's tricky because you never want to change your partner, in that you don't want them to stop being who they are, because that's who you're in love with, is who they are at their core. But if there's something going on that's hurting you or that's making your relationship more difficult than it needs to be, you really have to look at it and go, okay, is this a part of their ADHD? And so we can work on this and maybe teach them different habits so that this part of our relationship runs more smoothly. Or is this part of their personality? And by coming down on them about this, I'm going to be telling the change who they are, and like a part of them that they like and want to hold on to. So it's a little tricky in that way as well. You know, like you don't blurt, but you tend to like say an offhanded remark that you think is very funny, or like tell a joke that you think is very funny. And you maybe don't like, I always say, know your audience. Wrong audience, babe. And it's, you know, how much of that is because you have ADHD and so you're doing some kind of a blurting, and how much of that is just you? You're funny. You say offhand comments. You enjoy the fact that you just kind of can say a joke off the cuff and have it be spontaneous and things like that. So if I were to say, I don't want you to do that anymore, which is, I'm not saying, but if I were to say, I wish you would stop doing that, would I be putting a dent in your personality by telling you to change that part of you? Or would I be helping you cope with the blurting mechanism?
Right, right. Well, it's definitely blurting, because, you know, as you're talking right now and telling me, if I were to say that you have to stop doing that, I'm immediately thinking, I can't stop doing that.
Right.
It's a no-win situation.
Yeah.
I just hope that
they're not dirty jokes. That's the best I can do, is just hope you don't blurt the dirty jokes at the dinner table.
Yeah, the kids are too old now. I can't get away with it. Yeah.
They understand the references too well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's been some good ones, though.
Yeah. Let's not go into that.
Yeah. And that can do for now.
Okay.
I can always talk to you again. I know where to find you.
Yeah.
If you've made it this far, I'd like to thank you again for taking the time to listen. If you'd like to leave us some feedback or have any questions, please contact us through theadhddad.com or on Facebook at theadhddad.
By my own